God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. God spoke. He said, let there be light. And because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ in his kingdom. Welcome to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. In Oregon, something's happened that's not made enough news. It's the continuation of a tactic to ban your opposition from running for office. 10 GOP lawmakers have been banned from seeking re-election by the so-called Supreme Court in Oregon. I say so-called because it's very, very selective. Oregon is a former state of the United States. It left long ago. It didn't declare that. It didn't have a violent civil war. It simply stopped being part of America. In this case, what these Republicans did was, in order to protest some of the madness that is being installed in Oregon, such as the free and easy to get fentanyl and the sex trafficking that results from that, and the takeover of the states by a violent terrorist group called Antifa, which works with Black Lives Matter Incorporated, a member of which, by the way, Antifa was on the was the chief of staff for the governor. These 10 lawmakers decided to boycott the legislative session for a bit to protest some of the bills that were being proposed, which would continue the ruin of Oregon. It's a tactic that's been used multiple times by Democrats across the country. And you know what? It's illegal. It stands against the Oregon Constitution. You have a certain number of times you can have an unexcused absence from the legislature. It's a good rule. Republicans broke it. And so now the Supreme Court there is suddenly interested in the constitutional prerogatives of the state, the constitutional musts. They're much less interested in the constitutional rights of parents to be able to not have their children turned into pharma robots. It was the separate country of Oregon that pioneered transing kids at the age of 13 without parental permission. Wrong sex hormones at 13, surgeries at 15. That's been the case in Oregon for 15 years, not 15 years, but for at least 6 or 7 years. That's also the same separate country, Oregon, that banned tracking outcomes of these procedures. Not allowed to track them. Why would you want to know something like, hey, did that work? Did this actually help kids? Well, the reason they don't want to know that is because it doesn't and it can't in 90% of cases, 95. So that happened without enough fanfare. It's the first state to succeed in this, so others will do it. To Republicans, please understand lawfare is real. They're going to continue to press this, and I don't know that there's an out. I think the Republicans have lost. I don't think the Supreme Court can interject here because the state constitution is very clear. So they've won this round. Well, this round, this temporal round. But of course, Oregon has fallen in all shapes and forms. They recently created a state of emergency because, gosh, you know what? It's terrible with all these people on fentanyl. What's going on? We can't have this. Who thought of that? Well, they did. It's amazing to watch what God is allowing the West Coast to do to itself. I'm sure you saw, if not, we'll get to this audio next week, of Gavin Newsom, the dictator of the separate country of California. Well, I use these terms, by the way, to be exact. I'm really not being sarcastic. He has no limits on his power. That's a dictator, not a governor. He called out a Target employee for why are these people being allowed to shoplift? And the Target employee took him to task to say, because these are your policies. They can't be punished for under $1,000. Newsom took umbrage. I love that phrase, umbrage. Great character, by the way, in the Harry Potter series. And incidentally, I know that's controversial with Christians, but great character, Miss Umbrage. Also from the West Coast, Mark Zuckerberg and the CEO of Twitter, the lady who loves censorship, she's the creator of the phrase "lawful but awful." They were back east, Washington, D.C., the center of the universe, one of the many Babylons in our country. And man, it was good theater. It was some good theater. It's fun to watch. I like seeing Linda Yaccarino pretend to be in favor of free speech and pretend to be interested in stopping images of child abuse and children being sexually assaulted from the site she publishes. Neither of these things are platforms. It's so geeky. It's frustrating to try to describe this. This was theater because if the Congress actually wanted Facebook to stop allowing images of rape and sexual assault and Instagram being targeted by pedophiles using phrases like pizza. Oh, no, that's real. Oh, no. There's an NBC reporter who went and learned that was real. They use that phrase when they're trading pictures of kids being sexually assaulted. If they wanted that to stop, they would just point out that Facebook is a publisher, just like AFR. We're publishers. We can be liable for what we say. iTunes, on the other hand, well, we're a platform. Well, but you're not, because you ban certain shows, which means you're selective. In the case of Facebook and Twitter, even more so. If the Senate wanted this stuff to stop, they'd say, hey, let's be clear. You stopped being a platform when you started blocking things like the Hunter Biden story and people sharing their injuries from the COVID injections. That made you a publisher. Why would that matter? Because then they'd be liable. Mark Zuckerberg is a very interesting man. I've never met him. I've a few times in my life had some meetings with senior Facebook executives, and at one time I knew one of them rather well. But Zuckerberg, and I don't want to provide false witness here, Zuckerberg is far from a stupid man, obviously. And when he sat down for this theater session with the Senate, because that's all it is, they had this interesting exchange or series of them, and it is entertaining. There's some questions I would have asked if it weren't theater. In this statement here, Mark Zuckerberg is reading a lawyered statement for a reason.
With so much of our lives spent on mobile devices and social media, it's important to look into the effects on teen mental health and well-being. I take this very seriously. Mental health is a complex issue, and the existing body of scientific work has not shown a causal link between using social media and young people having worse mental health outcomes.
It's a great, really well-written statement, because it means nothing. In the body of work, there's not shown a causal link between using social media and young people having worse mental health. Let's parse that. Using how much of it? Causal link between using a lot of it or using it at all? Well, there are studies that show this. For instance, side-by-side analysis of teens who use Instagram and teens who don't, and guess which group has a healthier self-image? Right, the one that doesn't. Or, if you've ever had a kid captured by the trans cult, one of the things you can do to rescue your kid from that cult is to cut them off of social media. It's happened time and again in the circles in which we run. Because of our time in teen and adolescent and family mental health circles, and because of my work now with teens, I've seen it probably 100 times. I've seen it happen with kids where they instantly, within 30 days, come to the realization that they are a boy, not a girl. And it's predictable. The reason it's predictable is because Mark Zuckerberg's platform is a place that pushes this, as is Instagram, as is YouTube. And understand something, please. Parental screening software will not protect your kids from this, because those software companies don't consider this to be, well, adult material. My question for Zuckerberg on that topic would have been this. Mark, do your kids have access to screens all the time? Yes or no? What is the limit? And if there's no causal link, then why is there any limit at all? In Silicon Valley, it's well known that many, many CEOs, if not most, don't let their kids have access to these devices outside of a specific room so that they can strictly control access. The very notion that there's no mental health issues connected to this is silly. God designed us for real connection, to look face to face with one another, to in fact touch one another in appropriate ways. He designed us to feel the grass on our feet, not have facsimiles thereof. It was theater, because if it weren't, they would take away their waiver as a platform. They would say, you're publishers, because they're publishers. Senator Ted Cruz asked Zuckerberg about protecting kids.
Instagram also displayed the following warning screen to individuals who were searching for child abuse material. These results may contain images of child sexual abuse. And then you gave users two choices. Get resources or see results anyway. Mr. Zuckerberg, what the hell were you thinking?
All right, Senator. The basic science behind that is that when people are searching for something that is problematic, it's often helpful to, rather than just blocking it, to help direct them towards something that that could be helpful for getting them to get help.
In what sane universe is there a link for see results anyway?
Well, because we might be wrong. We try to trigger this warning, or we tried to, when we think that there's any chance that the results
might be
harmful.
Okay, you might be wrong. Let me ask you, how many times was this warning screen displayed?
I don't know, but the
hey, you don't know. Why don't you know?
I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head.
That's fair. They did not know the answer to that off the top of his head. Follow-up question. Mr. Zuckerberg, you're a publisher. You're not a platform. Why did you, instead of putting a screen like this in front of the Hunter Biden laptop story, why didn't you say, the FBI has told us to not show this to you, get resources or proceed? Why didn't you do that? When the Epoch Times, years ago, at the very outbreak of the COVID flu, when that was put upon our country and the globe, when the Epoch Times published a documentary sourced with experts saying that this was a virus designed in a Chinese lab, the Wuhan lab, why didn't you, instead of taking down people's Facebook pages or punishing them, why didn't you just put that label on that to say, the CDC doesn't want you to see this? The FDA has told us not to run this. The FBI doesn't want you to see it. Get resources or proceed. Why didn't you do that? Now, again, I don't want to bear false witness, so I will tell you my calculation on this is because, well, we get paid a lot of money from the FBI and the CDC to track people. They're big customers. So is pharma. That would be, I think, the honest answer. So it's fun to watch. It's neat to watch Mark Zuckerberg be made uncomfortable because of what he's doing to our country and to kids and to families. If they were serious about this, they'd simply say, you know, tell the truth. Guys, you're publishers, not platforms, and now you're liable for this stuff. And you watch. The next day, all of that will go away. It's only there because Mark Zuckerberg and his board want it there. We'll come back and I'll explain a saying I have. When everything is racism, nothing is racism. This is Todd Herman from The Disciples View. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. I was just listening to the news. I do that on AFR. Discussion of swatting. I'm going to get in this statement I made, this phrase I use, that when everything is racism, nothing is racism. I'll get into that in a second, but I got to tell you something real quick. We were at risk of being swatted. Having been a talk show host in Seattle with somewhat conservative views and being a Christian, although at the time I didn't really understand what it was to be discipled, I was a target. And there were a couple times where some kind of Antifa people decided to see what sort of target I was. And I have no desire to harm a human being. I have every desire to turn the other cheek. And if you're going to come to me with the threat of 3-on-1 beating me, you will find out that I still, it's never changed, was raised 75% redneck, and I am not a soft target. Not in those circumstances. I'll turn the cheek right up until you corner me. There was also an attempt to come and intimidate us at our house. Now, my family was gone, thank God. So I made a phone call to the local police. I said, hey, by the way, you know, I do this radio show, and I've had this happen, and I'm afraid that they're going to try to dox me or to pull off this hoax and have you think that I'm trying to kill my family. And so they sent out a patrol lieutenant to my home. And he became a dear friend. He came and he introduced himself, and he knew exactly what I was talking about, the swatting rather than doxing, swatting. And so, good enough. He and I shook hands. I said, thank you for coming. And I thought nothing more of it. Great cop. Appreciate it. When things got super challenging with our daughter, and she had made a very, very serious suicide attempt, and you call 911, police are a must call for that. They respond. Who's at the door? My friend, the patrol lieutenant, is at the door with his team. And when the people on the phone tried to get our daughter inserted into one of the madhouse clinics back there, which will just make kids worse, he stood his ground and said, no, she's not going to be going there. That'd be a hardship on the family. No, it's officer's discretion at this point. She's going to go to the local hospital. And he saved us. All because someone had tried to threaten us in our home and was probably going to try to swat us. God has a great habit of taking evil and making it good. And wouldn't you know that years later, many, many years later, I got a phone call from that same officer. Our kids are falling apart. Can I talk to you? Wow. Take that, Antifa. You didn't even know you were acting on behalf of God. Take that. There is a dynamic of theft that goes unnoticed. And I put a lot of this on the shoulders of people of the political left, but it's really crosses political bounds. You know, there's the old joke about something that comes out of the House or the Senate. Ignore the name of it. It means the opposite. The Patriot Act, for instance. My judgment was the Surveillance Act, an unpatriotic act. There is this with identity. We've talked about this on the program. That Satan's so good at stealing the identity. You are created by God, loved by God, and if you choose to accept the Lord Jesus and be adopted back into the family, you are now a child of God with the inherent privileges that come with that and the great gifts that we cannot purchase, the gift of salvation. In other words, this solid ground on which you can stand We can have identities that are broad. Yes, I'm created by God and given a family that loves me. And within that family, I've got these responsibilities I carry out. I've been blessed with friends who support me in this way, hold me to account. I've been given the following gifts. I can do art. I can speak. I can play football, etc. This broad base of things that make up your identity. What the left does is flip that upside down and say, I am black. That one thing. I am so-called gay, that one thing. I am so-called trans, that one thing. And you flip a pyramid upside down, it's no longer a solid base, is it? So it's a theft that's gone unnoticed, but there's also the theft of language. The theft of words that mean things or should. It's the erasing of meaning. Well, there's the literal meaning of the meaning of being created by God, the most important meaning. But then there's sub-meanings. I have a saying. When everything is racism, nothing is racism.
On today's episode of Is It a Microaggression or Is a White Lady Just Being Nice?
A coworker says to me, you're running this meeting very well. Mind you, the person who was supposed to run the meeting didn't come. So it could have just been a nice compliment. What do y'all think?
Okay, three things. Impact, intent, precision. Would she have felt compelled to say the same thing to a straight white male? We don't know because we can't guess her intent. Did I feel offended? No, I didn't, but that doesn't mean other people wouldn't be. So I think it's both. And that's why it's important to be explicit with your language.
The analysis. You did a nice job running that meeting. I think you might be racist. In a society where white people are being told that black people experience racism everywhere they go, that you do not want to be an oppressor, maybe she said in her mind, the person who gave the compliment, you know what, I'm going to reach out and say, because she did a good job running the meeting, I'm going to step forward and say, you did a really good job running the meeting. And maybe her thought process is, gosh, you know what, black people face racism everywhere, and everywhere they go, the people hate them because of the skin color. I'm not going to be that way. In fact, I'm going to be anti-racist and step out and say, you did a good job running that meeting. Or maybe she hates black people because she's a racist. And so she said, you did a good job running the meeting because I hate black people. When everything is racism, nothing is racism. This is important. Here's an illustration of how important it is. If everything is hot, nothing is hot. Because if everything you look around and it's hot, nothing's hot. Here's what I mean. You tell your little kid, don't touch the cat, the cat's hot. Don't touch your pillow's hot. Don't give mom a hug. Mom's hot. Don't touch the stove. The stove's hot. Why would you not touch the stove? It's like a kitten. To divorce a word like racism from actual meaning divorces the ugliness of it. It also divorces the exceptionality of it. It is exceptional. If you've seen true racism, it is exceptional. For me, it's a gut punch when you see it. It's so ugly. It's such an ugly form of sin. It is sin to hate the neighbor, hate thy neighbor. Why do we all go to King James when we say that? Even I do that. Hate thy neighbor. It's like when we do the Lord's Prayer, it's always in King James. I don't know why that is. Maybe because it's more beautiful. When you've seen actual racism, it's really, really ugly. I'll tell you, I saw it. I remember the first time I saw it. I was talking earlier, and I'm joking about being, well, no, I'm not. I mean, I was raised 75% redneck. My mom hates it when I say that. I don't hate that phrase at all because I understand what it means. To me, I understand it's offensive to some. My dad was a master social work. He was a gentleman, but he was big and strong. I think I've told you that before. I once saw him break an axe handle over his knee. He was also raised that way. My dad didn't get to know the Lord, didn't come to the Lord Jesus until he was in his deathbed. I'm so glad he did come to the Lord Jesus. First time I witnessed racism went like this. Real racism. We were in Western Washington. It wasn't Seattle, but it was on the coast. And my dad had organized a fishing trip for some college buddies. And he took his young son with me. And I believe I was about 6 or 7 years old. And this made an impact on me. We were walking out to the boat with my dad, Jerry, and Glenn. And when we got to the boat, the man who owned the boat said, "So, two adult men and two boys." And my dad said, "No, there are three men and one boy." And the boat owner, white man, looked at my dad and looked at Glenn, a black man. He goes, "Really? I'm looking at two boys." It's chilling. It's gross. And my dad asked the man to apologize. This is Glenn. He's my friend, and he's a full-grown man. I'm not told that I'm proud of what dad did next. I understand it. At this point, knowing what it is to be discipled, I would have preferred that he would have turned the other cheek and walked away. "I'll pray for you." That's not what dad did. He tackled the man and held his head underwater for just a little while. That made an impact. That was scary. I was really frightened. I asked my dad, "Are you going to go to prison?" When you see racism like that, it means something, because you know what you're seeing? You're seeing a very, very ugly sin. It should always be kept ugly and exceptional. You know, the few times I've seen it in my life, I've seen similar results, because it's ugly. And the shifting of this from racism being ugly to racism being virtuous is perhaps one of the scariest things in society. The Federal Aviation Administration has created secret code words to let black people who are apparently unqualified in the jobs at the FAA, because that's not racism. This is from Revolver.News, who has uncovered this story. One of the craziest things I've ever read. First, the FAA gave secret code words to students in the Black Caucus of Federal Aviation employees to put in their resume that would skip them to the front of the line. In another instance of the signals to go to the front of the line was to say the high school classes you received the lowest grades in was, quote, science. Yes, they literally shot you to the front of the line if your worst grades were in science. They're doing this through racism. Ugly, disgusting racism, but now beautiful and virtuous racism. See, it's ugly and disgusting to think that you might compliment a black person because you think black people might need extra compliments, because that means you hate black people. But if you say to black people, the only way you can get to the front of the line is through secret code language, because you certainly can't earn it, you poor, poor blacks. Well, that's because you love black people so, so much that you understand they really can't make it on their own, the poor darlings. That's not racism. How about this? God loves us equally. Well, there's a thought. How about this? And it was good. God put man and woman, woman from man, and then man and woman together. Very good. We can go, of course, to the words of the apostles, reminding us there's neither Greek nor Jew, servant nor master. There's not. God loves us equally. He wants us all in the family. You know Mark Cuban is? Mark Cuban, of course, the billionaire who sold one of the greatest, greatest spin jobs in history was the selling of Broadcast.com to Yahoo for $5 billion. And when Yahoo bought the company, they found out, wait a minute, wait. We're buying software you don't own and servers that don't belong to you and contracts that aren't going to hold up. We had $5 billion of, well, nothing. It was a great job. Mark's a very smart man. In some ways. Mark Cuban, on a Twitter fest, recently admitted to sort of breaking employment law. I've never hired anyone based exclusively on race, gender, religion. I only ever hire the person that will put my business in the best position to succeed. And yes, race and gender can be part of the equation. I view diversity as a competitive advantage. Now, how would you propose finding organizations that give preference to white people? Why aren't you working as hard to show examples of white preference as you are DEI? You claim to abhor both. Well, funny thing, a woman named Andrea Lucas wrote to Mark, EEOC commissioner here, unfortunately, you're dead wrong on black letter Title IX laws. As a general rule, race, sex can't even be a motivating factor, nor a plus factor, tiebreaker, or tipping point. It's important. Employers understand the groundwork here. Mark Cuban explains that he's using racism to hire, got called out by an EEOC commissioner, and he's also been being trolled by a social media trolling expert who keeps asking Mark, when are we going to see more Asian men on your basketball teams? We make up some 52% of the world. Where are we? Why are we underrepresented? But then again, when everything is racism, nothing is racism. We'll come back with the Tower of Babbling and more. I'm Todd Herman. This is The Disciples View. Appreciate you listening to A Disciple's View on AFR. You can get more at AFR.net. Appreciate you supporting AFR. It makes this very difficult to cancel your financial support. Not only does it allow us to have news that has God at the center, it allows all the programming you hear on this network. It also, as I say, makes this difficult to cancel. That's an important thing because cancellation is running rampant. In Europe, there are continuing efforts to cancel farmers. And there is a behavior that I describe, and if you listen to the show for a while, I use a metaphor, a ranching metaphor, called a kill shoot. The kill shoot works like this. It is sometimes miles apart of fencing, and the cattle are herded into that. They don't see the fences on either side. They're unaware. Eventually, when they see the fences, they're so far away, they just keep going forward. Eventually, the fences narrow down to one point, one single point. There's nowhere for the cow to go but into the kill chute. And if it's done in an ethical way, the cow feels no pain and it ceases to exist. And God knows what happens next. God does know what happens next. So kill chute behaviors go on all the time in the China model of pretend capitalism. The trans lie was a kill shoot. They removed any and all thoughts of using talk therapy to talk to someone about, why do you feel this way? For instance, a great question to ask a boy who says he's a girl is, what does it feel like to be a girl? Some boys will answer, well, I don't like to play sports. I like to dance. Oh. Great therapist might say, would you like to meet some other boys who like to dance? There's other boys who like to dance? Yeah. Would you like to meet some? And so that youngster goes to a place where boys dance. He says, oh, oh goodness, I don't think I'm a girl. I'm a boy who likes to dance. Indeed. But they remove those options because talk therapy is conversion therapy. And it's very, very bad. Shooting kids up with wrong sex hormones and mutating their body, on the other hand, is helping them to be their true selves. And it's very, very good and profitable. That's a kill shoot. Say to the parents, you want a dead son or a living daughter? Well, I don't want my kid to die. Then we'll go ahead and take over from here and turn your son into a fake girl. They did the same thing with COVID. Removed all the off-ramps. There's no treatment. Ivermectin is horse medicine. hydroxychloroquine will kill you. The only thing we can do is to shelter in place until the wonderful vaccines come along. But don't talk about them when they make you feel bad. That's a no-no. That's a kill shoot behavior. They're doing the same thing with electric cars. They're doing the same thing with gas stoves, limited in gas stoves. After all, only electric power is safe for the planet. It's also the only thing they can turn off at the source. And in farms in Europe, they're telling farmers, well, you can't have that many cattle because that's destroying the planet. So you have to kill them. But not your pets. You can keep your pets because they're not killing the planet. And you need to get out of the farming business. Because if you don't sell your farm, we'll take it, but we'll give it to some other people who run it more responsibly because they're going to build a factory farm, which is buildings floor stacked upon floor with carbon dioxide piped into it, making fake meat, all of it patented because people need that patented food they can only get one place. It's a kill shoot behavior. And it's happening in Europe. And the farmers, they're not backing down. I know that we're to treat elected officials respectfully. I understand that, and it's difficult. The farmers in France are a little past that point. They've been spraying government buildings with feces. They have taken the freeways and turned them into farm fields. Now, that would really, really frustrate me if I were a commuter. I abhor that tactic of blocking freeways. So here I am being hypocritical. And maybe it's because I think the stakes are so high. If they succeed in putting a kill shoot around growing food, if they succeed in creating kill shoot behaviors where the only food we can get comes out of a factory, it's not even real food, it's fake food. That's a dreadful future. And God has us. I will choose to trust in the Word of God rather than horses and chariots. On this program, The Disciples View, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with their feature called the Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciples View presents the Tower of Babbling.
I got hairy legs that turn blonde in the sun. I learned about roaches. I learned about kids jumping on my lap. And I've loved kids jumping on my lap.
With another man, that is not a weird thing. With Biden, that is a weird thing to hear. It's not just that figurehead Biden says this about what used to be our southern border. It's that his dementia may well. Am I joking about someone's dementia and I can't speak? It may well allow the figurehead to believe what he says.
With executive authority, is there more you could do? Absolutely.
I've done all I can do. Just give me the power.
I've done all I can do, says figurehead Biden. Truth is such a funny thing because it's so very obvious. When the figurehead was installed into the White House, the figureheads did about 8 executive orders to overturn all of the things that President Trump had done to limit illegal immigration. And if the Republicans, so in other words, he could just undo what he did. He knows that. He has to, unless he's forgotten it. Dementia is not a funny thing at all. When I mock it, it's because I'm mocking the idea that Joe Biden doesn't have it. If Republicans had a real, real plan to call Biden out on this, they would demand that he take a meeting, dare him to take the meeting. And when he didn't, because he wouldn't, take those executive orders, which you or I can pull off the internet today, print them out, hold them up and say, here's all you have to do, Mr. Biden. Here's your signature on the executive order. You write the word rescinded and the date and cross it out. Let your lawyers get to work. Now the border is back to being more secure. But the Republicans don't want the border secured. That's why they continue to have play game legislation. That was audio clip 1 of 3 in today's Tower Babbling, where we just thank God for showing us the way that human wisdom pales in comparison to his. Does the White House's chief spokeslayer believe what she says about our former southern border?
Is the border overwhelmed now?
So here's the thing, I just lay this out just a little bit, John. So on the first day of his administration, the president took this very seriously. And when it came to immigration, when it came to border security, he put forth a comprehensive piece of legislation. That was almost 3 years ago. If Congress, House Republicans didn't get in the way and they actually took action, we probably would be in a different place today.
When the figurehead came into the White House and was installed, he did about 8 executive orders that overturned the things that President Trump had done to enforce more border security. That's not taking anything seriously other than the opportunity to use this as a wedge issue, which all politicians use. And Joe Biden, despite his dementia and mental decline making him mentally insufficient to lead anything, despite the fact that he doesn't lead anything, he does have the mental muscle memory of a career politician and con artist. Wedge issues are important for that. I'm sorry for the rough language in terms of calling Joe Biden a figurehead or a con artist. I have no actual problems in my conscience in saying that. I don't think I'm bearing false witness. I think I'm correctly and accurately describing his behaviors and his mental state. And I think we need to do more of that. Last audio clip in today's Tower Babbling. Apparently, these two men who are they're on the outside of the border, outside of the fence to America, because some places there are fences, and apparently these two hope to enter America illegally, and they know exactly how seriously the people who run Joe Biden take the issue of illegal immigration.
We met a pair of migrants named Edwin and Wilmer from Guatemala who say they were looking for another area to cross where they wouldn't be immediately arrested.
Ahora, ¿cuál es el plan? What's your plan right now? To go look for Border Patrol?
Que ellos nos tomen, intentar entregarnos, no sé, a migración nos dijeron.
So what they just said is that they're walking along the border here. They're looking for Border Patrol agents so that they can surrender to them. They're going to keep going upstream here. Obviously, they can't cross here because of the barbed wire.
Those responsible for the enforcement here say it's working, with numbers of crossings dramatically dropping. But for migrant advocates and Eagle Pass residents like America Garcia, this scale of operation is just too heavy-handed.
I would not have expected that this was possible in a democratic country.
So they're looking for specific officers because they know specific officers have specific orders to allow them into the country to do a nominal job of saying, hey, are you refugees? Oh, you are. Here's $2,200 and a $5,000 prepaid Visa card. Let's get you in an airplane secreted around the country. Here's a phone. Please do respond when we ask you to come to court. But yes, figurehead Biden's doing everything he can. And so are the Republicans. Except they're not. It's frustrating. But I read the end of the book. God wins. Judgment is meted out. And that's a wrap for today's Tower Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
A silent mouth is sweet to hear.
On a Disciple's View.
I spoke earlier about this phrase I use, when everything is racism, nothing is racism. And I actually shared a story about when I was 6 or 7 and saw my dad confront racism in a way that was an ungodly way. I think the guy earned it. But I would just tell you this as well. I felt the other side of racism, or at least, I don't know that to be the case, racial discomfort. We do wrap the show up with these personal observations, by the way. It's a tradition of mine in any radio show I do, because you guys are so kind to listen. Why not know a little bit about the goof who hosts the show? When I lived in the black neighborhood in Seattle, where I was one of 2 black people in a probably 15-block area, and definitely in a 5-block area, I went into a restaurant, and that restaurant was called Ribs. That's exactly what it was called, Ribs. And so I wanted to eat some ribs. Walked up the street about 6 blocks, and yeah, there were a lot of people looking at, why is there a white kid? Because I was, 20? Not quite. 19, 20 years old. And why is he here? I walked into the restaurant and every face turned. Now, again, I don't know that it was racism. Could just be shock going, what are you doing here? This is the ghetto. We're not to say that, but that's what it was. And I felt discomfort, but I was used to it by that point. Well, grocery stores, 95% black people, and other people were Asian. And I was kind of used to the look. Pretty comfortable. And then from behind the counter back in the kitchen area, an older black man spoke and said, Are you going to sit? Are you going to sit? Yes, sir, I'm going to sit. Sit. Now, I didn't know if that was rude or just his way. Felt rude, honestly. Sit. So I walked forward to a counter, found a place, sat down, tried to make myself comfortable. The gentleman came out and goes, what do you want? I said, well, the place is called Ribs. Okay, Ribs, pork or beef? Both? Okay. Sides? I was looking around for, there was no menu. I was looking around. I go, what's best? Slaw? Okay. Cornbread? Okay. Cold slaw and cornbread. Okay. And how about a Diet Coke? Grape juice. Do you sell Diet Coke? Not with ribs. Grape juice with ribs. Okay. I'll have the grape juice. By the way, I didn't know this, but grape juice and ribs is fantastic. And when the food came out, this is where I think I made friends. When I took a bite of these ribs, I went, oh, actually, I didn't intend to, but I actually looked at the man sitting next to me, who of course was black, and I said, oh. And he couldn't help himself but grin a little bit. He goes, good? Oh, amazing. Amazing. I'd never had ribs cooked from a 55-gallon metal barrel. Ribs became one of my places, and I became recognized there. There were still some folks who looked at me. But from time to time, other people would call them out. I was getting looked at one time by someone, and one of the guys at the counter said, he comes here all the time. He's okay. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak. Because he first loved us, we speak his word. We walk in the path of Jesus Christ to make disciples of all nations and all races until we all speak again. May the peace of God that surpasses all understanding rest upon you and your family. On behalf of AFR and Randy, I'm Todd Herman. This has been A Disciple's View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.